13 minutes to 8 Central African time. We do have Lauren Booth online, journalist, broadcaster and media consultant live from the UK. You heard Ija speaking earlier on about that article in the Daily Mail where she was referred to as a cheerleader for Islamic zealots. And we've spoken in the past to others as well from the UK in terms of how Muslims are profiled in the media and the kind of rise in Islamophobia within the United Kingdom. Lauren, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated. Assalamu alaikum and welcome.
Wa alaikum salam rahmatullah and salam to all of your listeners.
Can you give us a bit of background to this article in the Daily Mail? What exactly did they say?
I don't really want to go into what they said, but it was a strange article in that there was no news hook. I've been a journalist for 20 years, and every story that takes up newspaper space has to have some newsworthy element to it. And this almost two-page, double-page spread on myself was just a list of personal rumors and attacks and everything you could throw at a person to make them either discredit them in their community, but also to hint at illegalities or hint at a bad character. I think that was... that was their aim. They tried to link the story to more recent attacks on two charities in the UK, one called CAGE, which your listeners may know about. CAGE speaks up against injustice and lobbies to most recently know facts about British involvement in extraordinary rendition and torture. You know, third-party torture, sending prisoners, captives, I should say, to places like Syria and Libya, and watching as they're tortured by other regimes in order to extract information that the government then may or may not use. So obviously, they have been a thorn in the side of the British government, and the attacks, particularly on Brother Moazzam Baig, who, as we know, spent years in Guantanamo Bay, are particularly acute right now. And so anybody who is affiliated to this charity, really they're looking to slander and slur.
Do you think that this is part of a broader agenda when it comes to Muslims who reside in the UK? We read reports recently about banks now not wanting to keep monies for different charities as well. Things seem to be becoming more difficult for Muslims in the UK.
I have to say that there is a definite sense of pressure on our community, and what is interesting, disturbing and saddening is that the pressure is on those who are, and I'm not talking about myself here, I'm talking about others, those who are trying to do the best for their communities. These are public speakers, they may be da'i, they may be talking about Islam in a positive way, they may be debating about Islam in a positive way, but they're visible. They may be heads of some of the biggest Muslim charities in the UK, and their charities, suddenly you get a letter or one morning and it says, we've closed your bank account because we've changed our risk assessment. Risk assessment is when banks say, is it worth carrying the association with a charity or an organization further. And often it's you know, agencies who work in Palestine and with Syrian refugees, helping the poorest of the poor in the Muslim Ummah. And to have your bank account closed for some of these big organizations, as you can imagine, is disastrous for their work.
Now, in terms of how Muslims in the UK should react, one is the political dimension to it, and the political reaction and using political vehicles to try and combat this. The other is how all of this plays out in the media. Now you are a journalist, seasoned journalist, media consultant. In your opinion, what's the route that Muslims in the UK ought to be taking in order to overcome this?
I think we need the time for cowering, the time for disunity, the time for separateness, the time for sectarianism is hopefully past now. People are waking up to the need to be actually more public, to be more open with speaking to the channels in the media that are still open to genuine comment, and to joining together as well with other parties who are perhaps feeling that they're being pressured into silence. The National Union of Students at the moment, for example, is being several of its members leading this being attacked by the mainstream media because they host Cage, Moaz and Baig, speakers on campus, because they want to have, they believe that universities, strangely, are talking shops, are places to look at political ideas, are places where young people should be experiencing different points of view from different communities. And yet a Newcastle councillor today has come under fire for agreeing to share the stage with Moaz and Baig, who is accused in another newspaper of having more than 20 years of history with Islamic extremists. Now, this is Brother Moazem again, who has offered to assist between government and those in Syria, who has tried to have people freed, who has tried to look after those who are without a voice, and to do so in a legitimate and a clear and a legal manner. And yet he's under consistent attack.
Now, apart from how all of this is playing out in the political space and in the media space, what's the sentiment on the ground? Do Muslims in the UK actually feel a kind of rise in Islamophobic tendencies, attitudes?
Yes, well, we genuinely do. I was speaking to a group of girl students from a secondary school, a Muslim school, and they were aged between 10 and 18, and I asked a question. I said, after Paris, have any of you experienced any comments or any unpleasantness aimed at your race or your or our religion since in the last 2 months? And I thought one or two would put up their hands. I'm afraid to say that 80% of those young girls put up their hands. And some of them had very disturbing stories. The majority said they'd been targeted, shouted at, jeered at, or pushed by grown men in their 40s. This is the big, you know, these are the big men who are picking on little girls from the Muslim community. And the parents didn't even know, so we're talking about massive underreporting here, because they don't want to worry their parents, so they're not reporting it. And, you know, some of the other attacks that were mentioned were from school children. So we need a lot more speakers going into schools, a lot more access to teachers to speak to them about this, so that they can present, you know, a reminder to their students about how to behave with other people from other faiths.
Finally, Lauren, are you going to take legal action over this article?
I'm looking at all avenues at the moment, beginning with the press authority, the press commission, and looking at making a direct complaint, and I'm having legal meetings at the moment.
Okay, Lauren, jazakallah for your time. Much appreciated.
Okay, thanks to you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. That was Lauren Booth, journalist, broadcaster, and media consultant. She was labeled in that article a cheerleader for Islamic zealots. She wrote a response. She said that being labeled a cheerleader for Islamic zealots is no joke. She doesn't want to go into the details of what they wrote about her exactly. She just said that it was very personal. It was an attack. They were hinting at bad behavior on her part. They were trying to discredit her. I understand that they even hounded some of her family members in the build-up to the article. They made insinuations that she became a Muslim in order to try and get rich from this decision. But we've had a number of interviews now in the last year or so with different people from the UK, and all telling us about the same thing. It's becoming increasingly difficult for Muslims in the UK. Muslim charities, Muslim organizations, HSBC, is that the bank's name, if I remember correctly. Recently, I think it was Islamic Relief, one of the major charities in the UK. I just called them up and said, look, as Lauren indicated, risk assessment has changed. You are no longer able to keep your bank accounts here by us. I know we had that one incident with the one Palestinian organization here in South Africa a few years back, and it was FNB. And there was a whole story about the listing and that kind of thing. But in South Africa, alhamdulillah, by and large, we don't have that problem. And that's a bounty for which we need to be thankful. We need to be really thankful to Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. It's 3 minutes to 8.